This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Westmo Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Manny Dean Fernandez is my author today, who has written a book titled Wake Up, God's Talking to You. And this is a unique title, Manny, especially because you're talking about dreams in your book. Tell me the inspiration behind it.
Well, about 30 years ago, I just had the most incredible dream, and I woke up with just an awe in my face, and I just couldn't believe it. And I said, wow, I just was just hit me so hard. And so I was just shocked. And as time went on, I was having some just incredible dreams, and I just started writing them down. And for 30 years, I've been logging my dreams, and I just have thousands of them now.
Your book contains how many, or is it just an overview of what dreams are to you?
Well, how many dreams, I really don't know. I mean, I sure didn't put dream after dream in there. I just used examples of when I had a dream or when someone shared a dream with me. I've had a few incidences there where I've had some prayers, and then I had a dream, and then someone had a similar dream, and it just, again, had me just awestruck of how I believe God was just leading me to write the book.
The dreams that you've experienced and others have experienced, do you feel those are supernatural in origin?
You know, I think so, and again, I consider myself a pretty good Bible scholar. I've been writing hundreds and hundreds of Bible studies that I share throughout the country. So I have a close relationship with God, and I know the Bible. And so I've always looked at it this way, Jay. If God spoke to everybody in the Bible throughout the entire Bible, what made him stop talking now? It's just like, and I say in my book, I think we just quit paying attention. And so part of my book shares people, how do you remember your dreams, and then how do they get interpreted? And in each chapter takes you deeper and deeper, because my book's not about really dreams. It's about how you can remember your dreams and how you can have a relationship like I do at night with God as you do in the daytime.
You also comment about a scripture that talks about dreams and fulfillment of dreams in the Old Testament, don't you?
Oh, many scriptures. There's scriptures throughout the book, and including, as they say, in the last days, men will dream dreams and have visions. And I believe that's coming into fruition, because as the most Christian people believe it, we're in our end times. Whether we are or not, I'm not a scholar or a prophet to see that. But I know this. I know that my dreams are powerful, and I have developed a very experienced awareness. And in my book, I explain how now I don't even have to write them down. I can have three dreams a night, and I've programmed my brain to just continue to remember them.
The dreams that you remember and have programmed your mind to remember, what significance have they brought to your life?
I'm not sure it works that way. In other words, you know, they've just been odd dreams that I've just recognized as you might say, messages from God. And one of my favorite ones that I put in my book is when I had a couple next door to us. They were having really arguments, and I went to bed that night having a prayer, and I said, you know, what do I get involved in this or not? And I woke up that morning, and I just was just absolutely floored at the dream that I had. But about 10 minutes later, my 7-year-old grandson, who knew nothing about the fact that I was writing a book, nor does anybody, and I put in my book that only my wife knew I was writing this for the past 30 years. I never shared it with anybody. But then my grandson woke up with just about a parallel dream, and he came up to me and says, you wouldn't believe this dream I had. And I just was just shocked by the fact, and I actually cried. I mean, and I even put in the book, you will be in tears by the end of this book. You're going to cry. How would a person not cry? There's just so much depth to this book.
And there's more to it than just it's not just a thesis on dreams. It's actually your life and how you lived it because of dreams.
Yes, it is that way. You know, I've got a chapter that says, "What, my God, why can't I sleep?" And I sit there and I say, God really has a message for us. And the minute you understand the message, that repeated dream will go away. So for a person who says, I just have nightmares, those nightmares, I truly believe with all my heart, once you interpret or once you're able to find out what, let's call it a message that God has for you, then he moves on to the next one. And I've learned that from my experience. And again, in the book, I share with the dry spells, I went months without having a dream that I remembered. And I truly thought, oh my God, this is the end. What happened here? But it was just part of the 30-year lesson. And then the most exciting of it all is where I can now literally get on my knees and pray, and I can ask God, God, where do you want this direction in my life? And he may not answer me immediately, but, you know, I'm a spiritual man, and I think those that will absorb this book in the beginning will be spiritual people. And if the book becomes successful, those that aren't so spiritual will still get consumed by at least the inquisitiveness of where this is going to take you.
In writing your book, you said it's over a 30-year period you've been keeping count or keeping track of some of your dreams. Did it take that long to complete, or did you just decide recently to actually publish a book?
No, I knew all the time I was going to be writing. I just was in no hurry. I had no hurry to do this. I didn't think that somebody was going to beat me to the punch because I had no agenda. I just was experiencing this, and now I'm 58 years old. I have an accounting business, a very successful one, and so, you know, I had my work still to take care of my regular occupation, and I wrote on the side, and I continued to just expand it, and then all of a sudden, just one day, I just woke up and said, I'm done. I'm gonna put this together now, and I'm going to take it to press.
152 pages. How would you introduce this to someone in a couple of sentences?
Well, I would probably say if you've ever had dreams and you wondered how they really worked or why our dreams are so bizarre, I think this book is an instructional book on how to remember your dreams, how to dream, how to remember dreams, how they get interpreted. And something that's really important, Jay, which I'm outside of the few words, is the fact that there's going to be no 800 number that a person's going to call to get a dream interpretation. I specifically say in this dream that if it's your dream, you're also going to come up with what it means. There's not going to be any kind of 800 or 888 numbers you're going to call and someone's going to tell you. Because as I go on to share, if I don't know you, Jay, and I don't know your life, then I surely can't interpret your dreams. I'd have to pretty much know, are you married or single? Do you work? Do you have problems? Are you unemployed and looking for work? If I know a person, I could probably give them a little better clue as to what their dream might be. But I sure can't have, or nor do I want anyone else to open up 800 numbers and give a dream interpretation.
Right. Well, that has become a business in the past, and you're not heading in that direction. But as you wrote this book, 152 pages or so, what was the most astounding event that happened in your life that you think will either shock, amaze, or inspire the reader?
Well, I think it just goes on and on because it truly does bring tears to my eyes. And I'm an intelligent man. I'm not just some weirdo who wrote a book. I'm a smart guy, and I'm a very analytical. And just as this person reads, and I say, one of the chapters is called To All the Skeptics, because I sure think there's going to be plenty of skeptics. But I think I go in and prove through various means my meaning to have this book. Again, no one knew I was writing. But the thing that just shocked me was my wife and I were traveled, and there's many of these, many. But we were traveling, and we'd stop at churches. And one day we were in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and this pastor gets up on the pulpit, and he says, you know, I've been preparing weeks for this this message that I had today. He goes, but I had the most bizarre dream last night, and I just feel like I want to share it. And I'm sitting there in the pew just crying because, again, we're traveling, and that happened to me over and over and over where just out of the clear blue sky, somebody would say something like, boy, I had this dream, and they'd share it, whether it be on the pulpit or at a kitchen table. They would share dreams. And that's what led me to believe that our God, the God of this universe, is surely leading me and inspiring me to continue on with this kind of a book to write.
What one inspiration or motivational thought do you want the reader to take away from reading your book?
I believe that every human being on this planet is getting dreams from God. And if they just learn the instructions of how to get those dreams and how to remember their dreams, because many, many people that I speak to wake without remembering their dreams, but I'm going to teach a person how to remember their dreams. And once you get that, I truly believe, And as I say in the book, in the Bible, God spoke to many people that weren't even in his circle. That there was, back in those days, dreams, even Pontius Pilate, before they crucified Jesus, his wife said, "Do not crucify this man. I had a haunted dream about him." And so that haunted dream, of course, in my opinion, it comes from God. And I think every man, woman, and child on this planet is having dreams from God if they just learn how to receive them.
Have you bumped into other books or authors that have written on similar topics or subjects in the Christian church?
I've read dozens of books on dreams, but none in the same capacity as through God. The dream books I've read have been more by psychological people and psychologists and so forth, and therefore a person flying upside down has one meaning, even if everyone's flying upside down. But the way I look at it, if I'm flying upside down, God's got a message for me. It's not the same message that everyone else does. But the answer is no. I found no other books in all of my study and looking and searching. I found no other books that was in the same capacity that speaks as I do in my book.
Do you believe that God answers prayers through dreams, or is it just another way of reinforcing his commitment and love for the individual?
Boy, am I glad you said that, because I say throughout several chapters, don't get me wrong, folks, this does not substitute reading your Bible, having prayer, having various ways, and how I go on to say it is, but now this introduction or instruction will teach you how to not only be awake and have a love for God, but be asleep and have a love for God, because I woke many times just singing praises, and I woke up just singing songs, because I was just so grateful that he was with me at night and in the daytime. Absolutely no. Reading your Bible, going to church, it's all very important, very, very important, Jay.
There must have been some challenges in getting this to print. Were there any that were difficult, or were they all fairly simple, and did you enjoy the process?
It took a couple of years, but I was in no hurry. I do truly believe that God guides our lives, and if it was meant to be, it's going to be meant to be. Just like the publicity or the success of this book, if it's meant to be, it will be. I wrote a book just like Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and all those other guys wrote books. Whether I'm inspired in the same capacity by the Holy Spirit or God just brought it to me, all I know is this: they flowed. That pen just flowed. I sat on that computer with my fingers typing so fast, it just kept coming to me. And of course, you rewrite and rewrite and rewrite. But there were challenges, but none that worried me. They've all done real well.
The book is titled "Wake Up, God's Talking to You." Our author, Manny Dean Fernandez. Sir, where can we get copies of your book?
Well, evidently they're going to be on Amazon.com here very shortly. They're not all quite ready, and Barnes and Noble, they tell me, will be carrying them, and I hope every bookstore in the country. But I also believe that part of the Westbo Plus is Westbo Press, that they'll be making me a website so people can go to wakeup.com and find some links there. But that should be any day now, actually, Jay.
Fantastic. Manny, thank you for joining me today and sharing your story and sharing a little of the history behind Wake Up, God's Talking to You. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Jay.
For Indie Book Publishing, Westbo Press, this is Jay Douglas Martin.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, everybody. This is Pete Six of Beatles and Beyond. Why don't we all come together and hear some of the tracks off the latest Beatles release on this radio station? Yes, why don't you look up the schedules on this radio station and join me and Beatles listeners everywhere to hear the latest releases from the Beatles on Beatles and Beyond with Pete Dix.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Abbott Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled, "I Thought I Wouldn't Tell It." Our author, Dolores Dallas, joins me from the Northwest in the United States. Dolores, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You originally are from Jamaica, man. Why
yes,
did
I
you
am.
End up in the Northwest of the United States? How did that happen, and what's the inspiration behind your book?
I came to the United States 34 years ago, and trying to raise my children, I decided that Portland, Oregon would be the best place for me to finish raising my children. So my husband and I decided that we would move to the Northwest and try it out. And I can say today I have not regretted that move.
Beautiful. Your story, it says, I thought I wouldn't tell it. That was the main title of your book. Share the background story into why that was the title you chose and a little of your history.
Well, I had a lot of unanswered questions about my growing up. And my mother wouldn't tell me what really happened, why she did not raise me with my dad. And so when my mother was diagnosed with terminal cancer and she realized that she was not going to be with me for a long time, I persisted in asking her a question about me. And she finally told me the story, why she didn't like me. And it's not that she didn't like me. She had her own issues. And being a only child and for how things went about, she just could not hold it together. Hmm. So she gave me to my father.
Your father, were your mother and father married? Understanding was they were not married parents.
No. My father was a married man. He had his wife and his family. And my mother was just a young 18-year-old woman with a fifth-grade education and working for him. And so that's how my conception happened.
What transpired from that arrangement of being sent to live with your father?
When my mother gave me away to my daddy, and he couldn't raise me because he couldn't take me home to his wife with his other children, so he gave me to a friend, and I stayed with that friend from I was about 3 months old all the way up until I was 13.
Was it a happy life?
Some part of it was, and some most part of it was not.
You had a hard life, is what
you
have described.
I had a really hard life, yes.
Jamaica is, from some perspectives, a beautiful place to visit, but for most of the inhabitants, a difficult place to live. What type of surroundings were you living in?
For me, living with older people. Now, these people that raised me, they were older people. They already have their own children. They are parents of 22 children of their own. And so for bringing in a child 3 months old, it was hard because they had done raised their kids. So all the children raised me, per se. But there were a lot of darkness in raising me from their own children, sons and daughters. There's a lot of abuse that went on, and also with Grandpa, who did things that he was not supposed to do.
Mm.
And that changed a lot of my upbringing. That changed my life, because the abuse not only was the fact that I was given away, the abuse started there too. And it didn't end there. But when a child is growing up, the first things that come to mind and the things that you see, those are the things you adopt to.
Yes.
And so I adopted to all those bad things, and all of my behaviors came out because that's all I knew.
Did you consider your birth parents your parents, or the adoptive parents your parents?
Well, I considered the adoptive parents my parents because I did not know my birth parents. My father would come and visit when I was of age, when I knew who he was, but he never spoke to me. My daddy has never touched me. He would come there, and him and Grandpa would be in the back drinking and talking, but he had never called me and said, hi, I'm Dad. He never touched me at all. I just see him coming and going.
Hmm. Difficult. Yeah. That's one reason why you have noted that this is a memoir of a hard life, but also of hope. So there was some positive things that came out of your growth.
Oh, definitely.
What were those?
Definitely. The positive thing that came out of my growth was meeting a man that who was much younger than I am. At the time, I didn't know. We in Jamaica, we don't have driver's license, so you don't have the opportunity of looking at someone's driver's license and say, oh, this is your age. But he was a young man, but he was also a mature young man. And I had already have my four children, and when I met him, he just took me and my kids and, you know, nurtured us. And that was one of the positive things that happened in my life, and then leaving the country to come to the United States. That was another positive thing. Even though there was a lot of hard things and things that happened to me, that it's only the grace of God that I'm still here, because I could have been dead, or something bad other than that would have happened. So I took those mistakes or harsh life things and turned them around, making things better for myself and my children.
As you began writing your book, 152 pages or so, what was your thought process as far as who this book would appeal to and why?
Well, my thought process about writing the book was that based on my history, I felt that there's other people out there, whether they're men or women or younger people, it would be able to help them to understand that abuse is not designated to one gender. It's male and female, young and old. And so I wanted to reach people that will understand that even though I'm not a movie star, I'm not one of those big people out there, it still happens. And if I can reach one person that will identify with what I've gone through, and it would be able to help them to pull themselves out so they can speak out, because we were taught not to tell our stuff. And that's why I said I thought I wouldn't tell it, because we were taught not to tell anything. You keep the family secret. You keep all of that to yourself. But it kills people. Mm. You can't tell, so what do you do with it? Nobody will ever learn from a mistake that has happened. You cannot correct something if you don't know what you're doing is wrong. And so my story, and I've had a lot of people that have bought my book, have come back to me and said, wow, Dolores, I didn't know that you went through this, but look at you today. They say, how did you do it? And they identify in their whole life, I've been dealing with this, but now I want to write my book. I want to tell my story.
The process of writing, how long did it take to go back and recount this history and put it into book form?
You know, it took me 2 years, and I have to give a lot of credit to my daughter, Melissa. She inspired me to write this book. As I said before, it was on my mother's deathbed when she revealed to me the things that made her turn her into the person that she was. And after the death of my mother, I grieved, because I couldn't put in my head, my God, how could she live with all of this all her life? She was 84 when she died. How could she live with this? Hmm. And my daughter, Melissa, is one of my seven children. I have seven children. And she said, Mom, you really need to write this book. And I didn't want to do it. My focus was on something else. I have a recipe for my barbecue sauce that I've been doing for years. Mm. And I was trying to get that sauce on the market. So I felt that I was going to just dive right into the sauce and just pour myself in it. But the sauce couldn't come together after many years of preparing this recipe. And she says, Mom, you need to write this book. And so I start writing. And the method that I use for writing, I just begin to write. I bought a lot of legal-sized pads, and I bought a bunch of pencils, and I sharpened every one of them. And each pencil that I use to write a certain part of my book, I never go back and use it again. And so I keep writing. And it took me 2 years to write this story. And I think it took me another 8 or 9 months to get it published. Hard, very hard writing it. There were times when I would not want to write, because I did not want to face my fears, and I didn't want to recall memories because they were very painful.
Is there an underlying message that comes through, one of hope? You do mention hope in your story.
Yes. The hope, I've lived the hope, and I'm living in the hope for the future. It was the hope for the future.
And how did that come about?
How did the hope for the future come about?
Yes.
Because all I could think about is my future with my children and my grandchildren. As a mother, I was a single mother for a while, and then raising 7 children with my husband and I, which only 3 of them is his, the rest are not his. And so my future was relying on the growth of my children, because if I can bring them out and not having them face the things that I had to go through, then I know that I have done what I set out to do, because I promised my children under no circumstances that ever want none of you to face the things that I have faced and live what I have lived. And today I can tell you my 7 children, they are 7 wonderful, beautiful men and women in society that have highly educated.
Mm.
Every one of them are highly educated.
Beautiful.
I am not gloating, and I'm not taking a credit, because if they didn't want to be educated, they wouldn't. They could have been like anybody else. My husband and I, we live paycheck to paycheck to raise our children.
Mm-hmm.
But they made use of it, and each one of them, some have 2 degrees and some have 3.
Amazing.
Yes. And I thank God that the man that he gave me for the rest of my life, July 4th coming, it will be 30 years we've been married and 38 years together.
Wow.
That's my future.
That's some good positive outcome from what was a very difficult beginning. Are you harboring any anger towards the individuals who made your life difficult as a young adult?
I was harboring a lot of anger, especially for the man that abused me highly, my children's father, one of them that abused me, that if you read the book, you'll see in it the abuse that I sustained from him. That scar really, it angered me even more than when my grandfather touched me in the wrong way. And I lived with that, and I had to, because I'm looking at my children and the man that abused me, and I still had to have the children, and I see him in those children.
Mm.
But I can say today, I'm not angry anymore, because I felt that I have done what I needed to do to get it out of me. I cannot live in the past. I have to move forward. None of the people back in the day that have abused me, grandfather, their sons or daughters, they're no longer alive. So if they're dead, why am I holding on to dead things? I tell my story, and I'm done with that, because I can't go back and ask them again, why did you do? Not even my father. He would never answer. He would never have answered me. I look at his picture every day on my mantle, and sometimes I pass that picture, and I looked at him, and I waved my finger at him, and I said, you were a bad man. The things you did was not nice. You hurt people. I don't know him. I don't know who he is. He's like a phantom in passing. He never one day told me who he is or where he came from. It's like a dark cloud. So I have to move on. I have 10 grandchildren that I need to live long enough to see them grow and be able to be happy with them. I want a happy life. I now am embarking on more happiness in my life.
Encouraging. If you were to introduce this in a couple of sentences, what would be the recap of your story?
I would tell people, this book, read this book. I'm not looking for sympathy, neither am I looking for anyone to come and say, well done. The thing is, what is the takeaway? What can you take away from reading this book is that it will tell you, don't let people tell you don't talk. Speak out. Talk about it. Tell your story, because once you are able to tell this, you'll be freeing up space in your life for more things. When you keep things in, it compacts and it harbors some serious hatred, and hatred bring illnesses. So talk about it. Tell somebody.
Beautifully
get a platform.
Put. Beautifully put. Great advice. There must have been some challenges in finding a publisher, or maybe getting your book published.
Yes.
What were those?
The challenges that I faced getting my book published, I didn't know what I was doing, so I wrote this myself now. I want to put this out there. Nobody helped me to put my story on paper. I wrote these, and I have all my writing pads, I never threw one away, with my story on there, that have been edited over and over to get me to what's printed in the book. What caused me to do that is because I didn't want anyone says, oh, I had a ghostwriter. I did not have a ghostwriter. What I had was typing. People typed for me because I don't type. And I had an editor who took all my material and edited it down for me to get it legally. And even when we did that, that still wasn't legal, because when I finally found a publisher after searching for months, I had to still go through it and take things out of it. So it's not easy to publish when you don't know what you're doing. And it's very costly. It was very costly for me, but I do not regret one moment of it. I don't know if I will ever recover what I put in that book, but that's okay, because if I can save one person, then that's good paycheck for me.
Title again is I Thought I Wouldn't Tell It, A Memoir of Hard Life and of Hope.
Hope, yes.
And our author has been Dolores Dallas. Dolores, where can we get copies of your book?
Copies are sold on Amazon online, Barnes & Noble online. You can also get it from Abbott Press, or anywhere a book is sold online. It's available.
Thank you, Dolores, for writing this and sharing your story. I will say it's done in a narrative style, so it's like reading a story. It's like reading a fiction, but it's not. So I advise our listeners to get a copy of it. I Thought I Wouldn't Tell It. Dolores Dallas has been my guest. Dolores, have you also decided to maybe write a sequel or get that barbecue sauce recipe published?
Yes, I am. I have a few things that I'm working on, but also I am working on a second book, and this book I will be talking about my mother. I will be highlighting her in the second book, because I want people to know, in spite of the fact that she abandoned me at birth, now I know and I understand. So there is always a story to a story.
Congratulations on completing this one. It's, again, a good read. Listeners, you can get further information about this book and anything else that Dolores pens in the future. I know there's a possibility of a recipe book of great Jamaican dishes. You can do that search under Dolores Dallas, D-E-L-O-R-I-S, and Dallas, D-A-L-L-A-S, or you can just do a search under the book, I Thought I Wouldn't Tell It, and her information will pop up. Thank you again for joining me today, Dolores.
Yes, I really appreciate it that you take the time out to interview me for this.
But Dolores, it's good visiting with you for Indie Book Publishing, Abbott Press. This is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life.
So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Westbo Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Our book today is titled Blessed Virgin Mary, Mother of All Nations, Pray for Us. And the writer, author, Patricia J. Vasquez. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Good to talk with you.
Thanks for calling me.
Your book is described as a book of prayers, but also could be termed a book of devotions, with a focus on prayers to end abortion. People of all faiths who believe in God can pray the prayers in this book. And while praying in a Eucharist Perpetual Adoration Chapel in a Catholic church, Patricia witnessed a miracle there. This is what your book is about, isn't it, Patricia? Tell us the story behind it.
Okay, well, when I was I was gone to a Eucharistic Perpetual Adoration Chapel in a Catholic church with my sister, and we went in there to pray for a while, and we knelt down to pray, and the monstrance, the outer 3 inches of it or so, was silver. And then within 10 minutes, the monstrance turned this beautiful color blue, like unlike any other blue my sister and I had ever seen. And I went and approached a couple of other adorers in there, and they said, no, it's silver, it's not blue. And then I also told the priest at that church about it, and he said, no, it's silver. And then another priest explained to me what happened to my sister and me was called a private revelation, which barely happens, and it's I was blessed to receive that. So I was curious the next day, took my camera along to see if it was still blue, and I just went by myself, and it was blue, so I took a lot of pictures of it, of this blue monstrance. And then the next day I went back and took a notebook and thought this would be a great place to journal and enjoy this beautiful monstrance encasing Jesus' consecrated host. And so I prayed for a little bit, then sat down and got my notebook out and started to write. And immediately I received what's called interlocutions, and God told me, I want to tell you a new parable of mustard seed. And in the back of my mind, I couldn't remember what the first parable of the mustard seed was all about. But it was beautiful what he told me and why he picked me to do it, and that he wanted 9 days of prayer for an end to abortion, as he was very upset with the abortions going on in the world. And
so that's how it all started then. That's how it all began.
Yes.
What is a monstrance?
A definition of a monstrance is a receptacle or vessel using the color of silver or gold for encasing the consecrated host, which is exposed for adoration. And another name for monstrance is ostensorium. So that's what a monstrance is. And people will spend time in prayer, and at these adoration chapels, it's 24 hours, so somebody always has to be there with Jesus. So people sign up to be in these chapels that have perpetual adoration.
That, in some congregations, is called a prayer chain, where you pray round the clock.
I was really excited to see the monstrance blue. It was really a wonderful experience. And another wonderful experience with the blue monstrance is that when I was editing my book, I saw 2 pictures of the blue monstrance in my book, and I thought, well, I don't need 2 pictures of this miracle in the book, so I will delete one of the blue monstrances. So I tried to delete it, and it wouldn't delete for me. Instead, a red monstrance came up, with the consecrated host being a darker color red, like you would perceive blood to look like the body and blood of Christ. And then the walls behind it were very dark blue, and not like the original monstrances were. It's a light brown oak color. But then sometime after that, I was in adoration chapel, and I asked Jesus about the monstrance turning red, and asked him about why the dark color blue behind the monstrance. And Jesus told me, it's because the skies were dark when I died on the cross. So I was in awe when it first popped up on my computer screen over the blue monstrance. And I made the sign of the cross over, and, you know,
was so happy to see it, and then I took a picture of it from the computer screen so I could put it in my pictures on the computer. So that was a special time for me too, along with other miracles I've experienced along the way. And not all the miracles are in the book, but five of them are. And some miracles I experienced were like, I'd smell roses around me when nobody else was around. That happened to me about three times. And also I'd see the sun become a dark blue with a yellow rim around it, and then a large pink cloud around that in perfect uniform. And then the sun was dancing. And there are a few other ones, but the main ones are in the book.
Patricia, as you were writing this book and telling your story, who did you think would enjoy reading it and benefit?
Well, writing this book, it led me back to the chapel, first of all, to write, and then to write what God was telling me to write in there. And I just kept writing it down and writing it down. I took a Bible with me every day, too, just to have a Bible with me when I was doing the 9 days of prayer. So I would review Bible passages and look through them when I was in there, because I was in there a lot, and I was taking turns with my church where I'm a member and going into their Eucharistic Adoration Chapel, too, to write. But between the two of them, I received, you know, messages and what to write about in the prayers, that Jesus was very upset and he wanted people to become pro-life from pro-choice and not to kill the little innocent babies in the mother's wombs anymore, and to convert back to pro-life and back to God, you know, and not doing these things anymore. It's praying for conversions of people back to God and giving up on abortions or believing in them.
Right. You had actually 9 days of prayer that are mentioned in your book.
Yeah, and that God wanted that because he said, I want to commemorate a typical 9-month pregnancy. And so I wish for 9 days of prayer, which can be said one day after another. And it was for all people to be able to pray. So it wasn't just for Catholics, it's for all Christians. And for the 9th day was for all people who believe in God to say that there that day 9 days in a row. But then it was also included as the 9th day for Christians, too. Meant for everybody.
It's an interesting idea to have 9 specific prayer days and 9 specific targeted areas of prayer, so that you can expect miracles on those particular days, and especially focused towards the end of abortion, which to a lot of people is alarming.
Right, right. And thinking that there's over 55 million abortions that have been done in the United States, and that doesn't even include the rest of the world, you know. And I'm praying for the reverse of Roe versus Wade, and for life at conception acts to be passed, you know.
Yes.
And so each day of prayer is praying for something different, you know. It's praying to give people information about things, and praying, you know, praying to teenagers or two, you know, like letting them know, you know, be careful what you do, and, you know, don't fall under peer pressure and this thing of thinking you have to get an abortion or whatever. And it just
covers the wide spectrum of conception through birth then in your 9 days of prayer. You also shared your manuscript with 6 priests from different Catholic churches, and a few of them gave their support and their comments. What were those supported comments?
Oh, okay. Well, I shared it with 6 Catholic priests from different Catholic churches, and a few of their comments were, follow Jesus. The next one was, Jesus is the way and the truth and the life. And another one was, get this manuscript published. Another one was, I like the new parable of the mustard seed. And another one is, getting this manuscript published, I would be doing a great deed for Almighty God.
Wonderful.
So that really made me feel like pushing forward with getting the book done, you know.
Right.
And also replying to God's request to me, because there was no way on earth I could have thought of when I sat down that I was going to be thinking of a new parable of a mustard seed, you know?
That is unique. How long did it take you, Patricia, to get this particular manuscript completed and ready for publication?
Well, it took me, I'd say about a year. But it took me longer than that because I started it in 2008 and then ended it in 2009 sometime because I couldn't find a publisher. And then I became sick, and then I went back. So that period of time was probably about a year. And then I went back to it in August of 2013 and started looking over it all again and editing parts of, you know, misspelled words and different things, you know, that... sentence construction or whatever, you know.
Sure. And your book is just 64 pages, and the actual written part is probably around 50.
Uh-huh.
So it's a fairly short read.
Yeah, and it's a lot with the chapters. You only have to do one day at a time, you know. You do them in succession, one after another.
So would you call this a devotional guide also, in addition to being a prayer book or a book of prayers?
Oh, yes, definitely. It's devotion, honoring God, you know, the Blessed Trinity, and honoring the Blessed Virgin Mary, you know, and honoring Jesus even as a youth, because he's depicted as a youth on the cover of this book. And that God gave me instructions on how he wants the cover done. And I hired a professional Catholic portrait artist to do the cover. But the days of prayer have Bible passages in each of them. They probably don't even take more than 10 minutes to read each day of prayer. But it is a devotional book. I would definitely look on it as a devotional book, because you are praying for something, and there's a lot of power in prayer when you pray devotion, you know. So to me, I at first thought of it as a novena, because in the Catholic Church, many people pray novenas to the saints or to the Blessed Virgin Mary. And those are usually 9 days of prayer, a novena. That's what it's called in the Catholic Church. But God specifically said to me he wanted 9 days of prayer for an end to abortion, to commemorate a typical 9-month pregnancy, you know? So I never called it a novena, because I figured God wanted it for everyone to be able to pray.
Good idea.
And only Catholics would understand what a novena is.
This is true. Or that other term that you used. There must have been some challenges in getting this completed. What were those, and how did you overcome them?
Well, some of them were... one of them was the Bible passages and getting them approved. They had to be presented accurately and approved by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. And they had the way I had presented them was just like one line after another. And then I asked for permission, and they wanted a copy of the manuscript, so I emailed it to them as an attachment, and they said all the Bible passages aren't listed correctly. So they assigned me a person to work with, and we worked back and forth for probably a period of 2 to 3 weeks to get them put in there right. So that was a challenge. And knowing that I wanted all the background information read and hopefully pointed out to people before the days of prayer was a challenge, because I didn't want them to have to think, well, I got to go back and see what this is about or whatever, but to be read first, you know, all the experiences I went through and all the miracles and getting the pictures done correctly. And you had to incorporate the pictures into a book a certain way with a number and or an alphabet letter or whatever. So that first, that was very confusing to me. And then cropping my pictures was a job. So I had to learn new computer skills.
Well, you've done a great job of putting this first effort together. And again, it's a devotional guide titled Blessed Virgin Mary, Mother of All Nations, Pray for Us. And the author, Patricia J. Vasquez. Thank you for joining me today. Patricia, where do we get copies of your book?
Well, you can order them directly from Westbow Press.
Or you can order them online. There's numerous book sites to it online if you give the name of the book and the name of the author with my middle initial J. You'll come up with about 4 pages of online sites to order a book. And it's available at Barnes & Noble. You can just call them. They don't keep books in stock, but they'll order it for you. And it's available on Amazon.com. They actually give a nice preview of the book on Amazon.com because that will come up with some of the online bookstores. That bookstore will come up too.
Fabulous.
So that's where you can get them. Or like I say, they're directly from West Bow Press.
And they can do a research online for Patricia J. Vasquez. It's P-A-T-R-I-C-I-A, middle initial J, last name, V-A-Z. Q-U-E-Z, and they'll be able to locate your book. Thank you for joining me today.
They have to put the name of the book, too.
And the name of the book, Blessed Virgin Mary, Mother of All Nations, yes. Pray for us.
Trisha. I have a website, too.
Oh, wonderful. And what would that be?
www.patriciajvasquez.com.
Wonderful.
And it'll bring up a website and place to blog and talk about the book and so forth, and for me to communicate with people on their blogs.
Exceptional. Thank you for joining me and sharing the background story of this effort. And listeners, I'd invite you to follow Patricia online on her blog site. Patricia, thank you for sharing your story, and we hope to hear from you again in the future.
Thank you very much.
For Indie Book Publishing, West Bow Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.